This is the House of Hockey podcast,
where we talk about the game and the lifestyle.
We've got opinions as hockey fans, friends, and from the female perspective.
Welcome to our house.
Welcome to the House of Hockey podcast. This is episode 180. I'm one of your hosts, Ray Ray. My co-host, Breezy, is still on the long-term injured reserved list. So filling in today, we have Andy Zilch. He is a friend. He is a former guest and now co-host multiple times during this injured reserve situation. Andy is a freelance play-by-play broadcaster. He recently covered the ACHA National Championships, and he works with the Champions Hockey League, and he's fresh off of the St. Louis Blues team charter plane, a weekend calling games with the Blues. Welcome back, Andy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be on and talk about everything hockey and give you some insight on what occurred here over the past few days.
Yes. So you called, you did the play-by-play for the Blues, who were doing a West Coast swing. You did San Jose and Anaheim.
Yes. So give you some insight here. The Blues had a three-game road trip. They actually went from St. Louis to Nashville, and it was a really tough break, kind of segued them to move into the postseason unofficially with that loss to Nashville. It really put them in a tight spot in the wild card race. So there was a national televised game, and the radio broadcaster for the Blues is off this week. So the television guy for the Blues jumped on the radio airwaves for that game against Nashville, and then the team flew out to San Jose to play the Sharks and then the Ducks Saturday and Sunday, respectively. So I'm in San Diego right now and was lucky enough to be here, and my travels were just driving up to the Anaheim area. I flew out of John Wayne Airport, joined the team in San Jose on Friday night, chartered back down with them to Anaheim after the game against San Jose, went and got my car, and then joined them at the rink in Anaheim and called that game as well on Sunday.
That's so cool. Oh my God. What's it like being on the plane? Like,
well,
are they really cool. Just like, they're just playing cards and games and watching movies, like, or is there something else?
Yeah. And, it was after a tough loss too. So, that's one thing that as a staff member, you have to keep in mind. This is, my 12th, 13th year broadcasting pro hockey. So, you can't jump onto a plane like that, especially on the NHL level, and be all happy go lucky. Yeah. I actually, the video coach is a dear old friend of mine from back when I broadcasted with the Springfield Falcons in 2014. And was able to catch up with him a little bit on Friday night. And then I saw him on the plane after the game, and I just gave him, one of those. Mm-hmm. And, he's sitting, right across from Doug Armstrong and Drew Bannister, the interim head coach. So didn't want to be like, hey, dude, what's going on? After a tough loss like that. So the plane ride was pretty chill, though. I heard some card shuffling, but there wasn't much conversations going on. Especially when you're a team that is the only team in the NHL to lose to the Sharks multiple times this year, there wasn't much fun going on in that plane.
No, I'm sorry. I laughed, but no, for you, you can't laugh, but I can laugh.
No, yeah.
I'm sort of a professional in this field.
That's the way it is though. Sometimes if there's a loss that I've experienced with the team that I'm covering and I have a good broadcast, right. I did a solid job, but you got to take it down. You can't be overzealous. You got to match their level because mm-hmm. they're all mad. You're on a bus or a plane with 25 guys that are not happy with the outcome. So you have to match their level. And when I have a bad broadcast and they have a good game, I'm on there. I'm like, ugh. And they're like, yeah, 2 points. And I'm like, go guys.
Yeah. They're like, leave me the fuck alone. No, you would never say that. That's what I would say. It's interesting because, being on the charter plane with them, like internally, you're probably like, oh my God, this is so cool. Or, okay, I would be, oh my God, this is so cool. And then they're all mad. So you're just like, and just like waiting to get off the plane so you can call anybody that understands this sport and this world to be like, dude, I was just on the plane and it was so cool. And like, yeah, This is your moment to like have the freak out if you need that.
Yeah, and it's an awesome experience. I did travel with the Blues on a plane in the preseason game when I called their preseason game. And it's been my second time experiencing this. So when you get on the plane, there's already a menu waiting for you of what the options are. Appetizers, entrees. There wasn't desserts, but I think there was a dessert last time. I can't remember what was on there because it was a very short flight. It was only an hour with Tulsa. And this one was about an hour 15, so still another short one. But when you arrive to the airport, you arrive on the runway.
Right.
So your buses already went through TSA pre-check after you leave the arena. And for the second consecutive time, I got screened.
God.
So I've had three travels in the air with the pro NHL team, and I've been screened twice.
Oh,
so what you do is it's so interesting how all this happens. And hopefully I'm giving good detail to all our listeners and viewers.
Yeah.
If you do get screened, you have to sit down in a chair. You lift one leg, they wave it with the wand. You lift another leg, they wave it. They go through your book bag. They make you stand up and you do the arms out thing and check you there, and then you're good to go. So it's a very quick process, but I think one in every like 15 people get screened. It's just all at random. So I guess with the last name of the letter Z, they're like, let's get this guy at the end of the alphabet.
So
when the buses arrive to the jetway, players get off first, they board the plane. And then once the players board, then the staff can board. And it's the same thing deboarding the plane. Players will jump off first, staff waits, and then you join afterwards.
Okay. Media last.
Media's last, yeah. And that's fine. I mean, I've always been that way. I like, even if we arrive at the arena, because there's two separate buses, technically three, because the last one's for scratches. So first bus will leave, let's say, 2.5 hours before the game. Second bus will leave 2 hours before the game. So that's everybody. Generally, there's a media bus and a player bus. But when you're going to the arena, you all arrive together. There's no two separate buses. And I've always been one to wait for the players to deboard the bus. So that's what occurs again when you arrive to the arena.
Interesting. Yeah, that's like in the entertainment world. I learned when I was on set once that crew eats first. Like talent doesn't. Crew eats first and then talent eats. And I've sort of always followed that now whenever there's like buffet style, you know, whatever. You're supposed to let them go first. And
that's how it is in the American Hockey League. So in the AHL, you have the option to put some of your per diem towards the meals that are catered, which I always like to do because, first of all, it's right there at the, you know, at the room in the hotel, and it's delicious meals. Like, it's chicken, and it's great pasta, fettuccine alfredo, which is one of my favorites. And I would always just let the players go through because I don't want to be the guy loading up chicken, and then your starting goaltender's like, there's no more chicken. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, meal was good.
Yeah, it's good. Oh, here, you want some of mine? Yeah, here you
right.
go.
Yeah.
Is that cool? Want to share? Yeah. Are you sharing? Yeah.
Right.
No, you don't want to do that. It's the right thing to do for sure.
Yeah. So those are the experiences that you have. Excellent stay in San Jose. We stayed in an area called Santana Row, I think is what it was, which is incredible. And then we stayed sort of by downtown Disney in Anaheim, which was another excellent. It was the JW Marriott, which is an excellent hotel. So you're staying in some really fantastic places. I had so much fun. And I got a brand new appreciation for San Jose because generally when I've broadcasted games in San Jose, we stay downtown, which got hit so hard by COVID. It's really tough to see because I started broadcasting in San Jose in 2018. And I was like, okay, this is fun. There's some new experiences, good steakhouses. And then once COVID hit, honestly, half of downtown San Jose, because they got hit first and they got hit hard.
Yeah.
Half of downtown got shut down with all the businesses. So I think they're starting to get back on the upswing. But Santana Row, again, I think that's what it's called. That's alive and bumping.
Nice. Well, it sounds like you had a lot of fun. I think that's the coolest thing, that you were on the plane and you get to experience what they do, and the good and the bad.
Yep. Yeah.
The good and the bad. You get the good meal with the bad energy loss thing happening, but it's okay.
But and I don't know how, but I got Caesar dressing on my suit that I got to figure out how to get rid of.
Oh God!
Because it's in, they give it to you. They give you the salad, and it's really a great preparation of how they give it to you. It's almost like a restaurant type of Caesar. You know, it's the big lettuce leaves that you got to cut up. Yeah. And they give you the Caesar dressing in those little, you know, plastic cups, the Jello shot cups, if you will. So okay. I think as soon as I undid it, and I knew it was going to happen, and I tried to shield it with my palm, as soon as it went, the pressure went right on my suit. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Dry clean, baby.
I hope it is. It's my baby from State and Liberty. So I might have to reach out to them and see what the care is or look it up online. I love those suits. And I got, hey, shout out to State and Liberty. I got a lot of shout outs in the show for their suits. So,
nice.
Yeah.
They're paying you, right?
They're not paying me, but they're doing everything but.
Okay.
I'm getting paid back handsomely in terms of, I don't know, what is that called? Being an influencer and.
Yeah. Oh, Andy's an influencer now.
And reaping the benefits of that.
Goes on the team charter plane, and now he's an influencer. Watch out.
Walking around with Caesar dressing on my lapel.
Looking like a total pro. Yeah. Looking like a total media guy with shit on his coat, you know? Like, just total cliche.
I was waiting for, and I had meatballs and Caesar salad. I was waiting for a meatball to drabble on my suit, but luckily that didn't get there.
That's good. At least it's just the Caesar. You know, something that I'm sure you didn't do this, but I just have to ask just in case. But did you get to talk to Binner after the Ducks game about his extracurricular activities and throwing blindsided punches at one of the Ducks players?
You know, I didn't. And I know that's on our docket to talk about. If we want to start talking about it, we certainly can.
Yeah, I think we should. What is he doing? Why does he do that? He, like, what's the word I'm looking for? He cheap shotted him.
He tagged him. I'll agree with you on that one. I don't mind it though. I mean,
of course you don't.
He's adding a little something extra. I mean, when you look back at, like, I remember Tyson Nash. You know, he's the color guy for the Arizona Coyotes now. And he used to run around and do the same thing as a player. He'd hardly ever fight because Tyson Nash, he had so many guys around him. I don't think he had Tony Twist yet because Tony Twist was a little bit before him. But he had guys like Reed Lowe. I think Kelly Chase was there too when he was skating around. But he had so much protection. It's just like a gnat. Like, you want to get him, but you can't. And some people hate to love him. I love to hate them, and then some people hate to love them.
That's me. Yeah. Hate to love them.
So, you know, I, you know what? Ross Johnson came in, and he got Walker, who's a foot probably shorter than Johnson. And Bennington saw it, and he said, you know what? I'm going to do something about this. And then everybody for the Blues did something about it, and then everybody for the Ducks came in.
I just, you know, I don't agree with a lot of his choices on the ice. There was a time when it was wonderful, and now I feel like it's just gotten to be really cringy and dirty, and like, you're not that, well, you're not all that, okay? Like, really?
The one instance, not this past one, but the last one prior to this, I was like, yeah, it's a little unnecessary. I can't remember what it was when I was watching.
At least you've got some fair and balanced opinions here. Because
I like to think I'm pretty fair. It's good. I like to think.
Get a hold of your goalie, Andy. I can't. get him in line, all right? Let's talk about another fight that occurred. It was the fight heard around the league, the line brawl 2 seconds into the Devils-Rangers game. It was like a fight night. Every player on the ice at puck drop gets ejected except the goalies. It's just epic, incredible, exactly what we love as hockey fans and supporters of this league. What did you think? I was like,
loved it.
So excited.
Yeah. I mean, that's you don't get that much in hockey ever. So, and it was all over social media.
Oh yeah.
All over. And you know, that should tell you something. I know that I completely understand why the league doesn't like that. And my, here's a good story.
Wait, why don't they like it?
Well, I'll tell you. So the very first ever AHL game I broadcasted, I was in Syracuse, and I know we got something about the old Slapshot movie coming up in our docket. So in Syracuse, that's where they filmed some of the Slapshot movie. And I was broadcasting for the Springfield Falcons against the Syracuse Crunch. And one of our players got into a fight. He lost his helmet, fell backwards, hit his head on the ice.
Okay.
Luckily, he was okay. Mike Hofel. Never forget him. Great guy, too. And when that happened, I was like, wow, could you imagine if something detrimental would have occurred to him?
Right.
Like, wow, like terrible. And for, you know, such a great human being for that to happen to, and thank God he's okay. And that to me is why the NHL doesn't want so much fighting in the league. That's why they don't want boarding. You know, that's why when players lose their helmets, you need to make sure that you go to the bench, grab your bucket, whatever the case may be. So that's why I understand it, but I still love the fighting aspect. I hope we never lose that because to me, that's when everybody in the building stands up. And if you had a line brawl, if you're sitting, give your seat to somebody else. Exit the doors and find somebody else that wants that ticket. Because if you can't get up for a line brawl, I don't know what can get you excited in a hockey game.
That's the best thing you could ever have happen in a game. And the people who were in person to experience it are so lucky to see that. Yeah. And such a rivalry between the teams. This is all part of it being an important part of the culture and having these rivalries between these two teams and the fans and letting this play out on the ice. And Matt Rempe, who's like, I love the kid. I think what he's bringing to the sport right now is just a nice breath of fresh fist fighting air, and he's just awesome. So
and it's following, you know, we saw Ryan Reeves, I can't remember what day it was, but you know, he had a really good one too. And you know, it's becoming a lost art because I saw somewhere over the past week and a half where they were talking about bringing the red line back again and calling a two line pass. And it was a former player. He said, it's so north now. It's so much north now. You just go, 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 go. Dump it in. Keep going. Go in there. Attack. North and south. And he said that it takes away some skill out of the game because you can't strategically plan your puck possession when the two line pass is in order. And I thought it was a good thing to think about. And then that might also bring in a little bit slower footed guys and give them an opportunity to make the NHL, which then would parlay. Slower guys generally aren't your lead players. They can be some grinders. They can be fighters. Maybe that opens the door for those guys again. Right. A lot to unfold there and a lot to unpack, but you know, that's conversations that are held at the Board of Governors meetings, not here at the Haas Hockey Podcast.
No, we can pretend to talk about it.
Certainly can.
I my favorite part of that was Jacob Trouba's quote said that whole line brawl was, quote, kind of a team building exercise.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. And it is a bonding experience. Yeah.
When you can all, you know, he was talking about, I don't remember who in the article said, they were talking about Rempe and how he's really stepped up and defended all of them and, you know, supported them and just been part of this team and contributing in his way, and they were like, yeah, it's the least we could do, and the game didn't really matter, so you know, like, let's go for it, build that team camaraderie. I mean, he's not wrong. There's lots of pluses to these things. Yes, there's the risk of what you had mentioned, but
yeah, and it's old school, which will transition into our next topic. If you want to kickstart us with that one.
Which is what? The Tkachuk story?
Yep.
Okay. I was like, here we go. Okay. So Brady Tkachuk got extremely upset with Nico Hischier, another New Jersey Devils team story. Game ends. Hischier's like right at the net before the game ends, and he taps the puck in, doesn't do anything aggressive, but Tkachuk loses his ever-loving mind And I'm calling hypocrisy because I looked it up. The Sens, they're Ridly Gregg. Oh, he can do it. He can do that, a slap shot into an empty net, but Nico Hischier can't do it to you. I call hypocrisy. You sit down, you go back to the bench, Kachuk, and I don't want to hear you talk. Okay? Go away.
So it's a little different, but
it's the same thing.
No.
I think it's the same
thing. I didn't. We were on the podcast. I shared my opinions on it. I do not like the slap shot in the empty net. That's showing up the other team. This one, it's an unwritten rule in the NHL. It's just like after a whistle, you don't shoot the puck at the goalie. And I've seen where if there's a whistle and you put the puck in the other net, the goalie loses his mind. So the goalie wasn't there. He was pulled.
Right.
The horn sounded as Hischier was crossing over the blue line. And he slowly went in and pushed it in the open net. Now, the reason why Kachuk got net, and for those of you who are novices to hockey, this is why he got net. You earn putting the puck in the net. You don't just go skate by and tap it in and let it go. If the horn sounds, you don't put the puck across the goal line. Unwritten rule. It's an old school rule. Mm-hmm. Kachuk was raised that way.
Yeah.
That's why he got net.
Listen.
So I agree with him on that one.
Really?
Yes. I agree with Kachuk.
Come on. I think there was, if the goalie was there, sure.
The goalie would have went after him and tried to chop his head off.
For sure. Not acceptable. Don't do that. Whistle. Yeah, stop. You know? But like, not to compare this to basketball, because I don't like basketball, but
I don't either.
Neither do you. But like, buzzer goes, they still take the shot. Nobody gets pissed off. Why is it different in hockey?
Well, because you score like 100 points a game in basketball. Who cares? And in hockey, it
matters.
It's an unwritten rule.
Well, they should just put it in the rule book then, because like, you're just getting all
up. Well, then guys are gonna do that all the time then.
Not if they're gonna get fined or something.
So you would warrant a fine for that?
Well, if you don't want this to happen and this is an old school unwritten rule, well, maybe it should be a written rule. And like, I don't know, that's all they seem to respond to.
I mean, take matters into your own hands. You know, that's the barbaric part of the sport, I guess you could say. But I'm a big fan of it. Like, I completely agree with Kachuk. I don't know. Was anything handed down to either player?
I don't know. I didn't look.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think so.
Here's where I take issue. Okay, fine. I will get on board with the unwritten traditional rule and this is something you don't do and goals are earned. However, I'm going to need some facts and some proof that Kachuk spoke to his teammate, Ridly Gregg, about his empty net slap shot goal and explained all this to him. But if that didn't happen, I cannot get behind any of this bullshit happening with the Sens, okay?
You know, I'm sure there was a conversation. And it wasn't a, hey man, let's go have a coffee, let's talk about it. I guarantee you, it was, they're untaping their socks and they're taking their blades off in the dressing room. And somebody goes, you can't do that, dude. I guarantee you that was spoken about in the Sens locker room after that happened. But you can't let him get mobbed, though. You got to try to go to his defense on the ice, because that looks terrible if you don't go defend him.
See? Hypocrisy. That doesn't make any sense. Like, your team does it, but you have to defend him. But now...
It is a little bit, but you can't let him get hung out to dry. It's like when someone does something stupid and you're like, dude, now I gotta go to bat for you, you know, even though you don't want to. You gotta be like, hey, like come on. You've had that moment in your life where someone did something stupid and you're like, I gotta defend you, but we're gonna have to have a conversation about this.
I don't think so. I don't know. I'd be like, you're on your own with that one. I cannot support you and your bad choices. Like, I will not defend your poor decisions. That's like those fools on Vanderpump Rules who are like, Oh, well, you cheated, but you didn't cheat. But I cheated 3 years ago, and that doesn't count. And so it's like, no, just have some authenticness about you. Like,
I don't know what Vanderpump Rules is.
That's fine. Don't worry. It's a reality TV show.
We'll agree to disagree on the topic.
That's fine. Something else the Sens had that was a super unique experience was actually have to do with the eclipse. I think probably, maybe not, but it was, the game was in DC. The Sens were in DC and the sun was coming through one of the walkways into the arena, like out on the concourse. There was a window and the sun was blinding Corpusalo right in the eyes. Sorry, my notes are all over the place. And they had to stop the game and wait for the sun to move. Like, there's no shades. How does the arena not know that, like, the sun's moving? Like, we have all these game ops. How does this happen?
Well, somebody screwed up, because I've seen in arenas, like, I know
there's like curtains and all kinds of stuff.
There's curtains that you can do that kind of seclude the arena bowl from anything that's going on in the concourse.
Right, like further out, like you have the curtain further out, so when somebody comes in, it doesn't keep opening. Right.
Yeah, so an usher blew their job or something happened there, because somebody should be standing there, especially in an afternoon game. The sun's coming in, especially the arenas that have windows like that where it just goes straight in. Usher needs to stand there and keep that curtain. The curtains, I guarantee you, are open and they're just letting people come and go. So that's exactly what happened. I wasn't even there, but I know.
It's you do know. And what I know is it's unacceptable to happen in this league. Like, come on, like, we're better than this. Get it together. Figure it out, Capital One Arena staff. Sure. Look, we all make mistakes. We cop to them, but that was super crazy. And I was like, is this because of the eclipse? Is the sun just like happened to be in a different spot than, but like the sun's always in the same spot. It's not always, you know what I mean? Like, you know, at different times of year,
you know where
the sun is. And
anyway,
that was a little crazy. Something else that was really crazy to me was Jeff Skinner has played 1,000 games in the NHL. Wow. And I don't know, but I don't think I'm the only one who was like, wait a minute, didn't he like just get in the league? How could he already have 1,000 games? And then I started researching. And
can I guess why?
Yes.
Because it's the teams he's played for, right?
Yes.
Like, you don't really hear about him because of who he's played for.
No, I mean, I only heard of him because of the series he does on Instagram, the Between Two Stalls. He's hilarious. Mm-hmm. And he's exceptional on social in that way and doing all of that. I only just heard of him. So whenever that got started, that's when I learned who Jeff Skinner was. And that's unacceptable, because if a guy has played 1,000 games, that's a huge thing and a huge accomplishment. So I went back and looked, and he was with the Canes, and obviously now he's in Buffalo. And so, alas, the team got him a jet ski and did a funny little Between Two Stalls episode that I watched from start to finish because I love it. But didn't know the kid's been around. He's not a kid.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he ain't no kid anymore.
No.
But congrats to him, though. You know, that's an accomplishment. I mean, I'll never forget a comment that was made to me. It's one of those days where I was in the office, and me and a few staff members were mulling around on HockeyDB, and somebody said, oh, my God, 700 games in the NHL. But he was terrible. And our director of hockey operations overheard that. It was Pat Conacher. He was known as the protector of Wayne Gretzky back in the Kings days. He was our director of hockey operations. And when he heard that, he said, hang on. He goes, I don't care how bad you think somebody is. If they played 700 games in the NHL, they're good. And I heard that and I was like, dang, like, he just told that staff member. But it's true.
Yeah.
Like, you can't stick around in the show for 700 games and be a bad player. Like Skinner, 1,000 games. Kudos to you, man. Like, hell of a player.
Super healthy still. It's probably going to play a couple more years. Like, can at least play several more years, you know?
Yes.
What a career. It's not the career you expect when you go into the league, and the hope is always to win a Stanley Cup and things like that. But he was like, I should have written it down. He won rookie awards his first season. He went to the All-Star game, I think, in his first season in the league. But he came in 2010, which is when everything was happening in my world with Kane and Taze. And so I couldn't see or hear anything but that. So like, I couldn't tell you anybody else who existed in the league at that point, besides my team. So that's also bias, but
I'll let you off the hook.
Thanks. It was before I started really diving into this world and learning. I have a lot of history still I need to learn, and I'm working on it. But either way, Coyotes trying to create some new history for themselves. There's another new plan for an arena, in case anybody forgot. They don't have an arena, and they are playing in a college arena right now, but they plan to build in North Phoenix. If anybody knows the area, I'm sure that means something to you in Arizona. But what they're going to do is, the proposal is to build a privately funded mixed-use development that would, of course, be anchored by the arena. And I guess the location of the land has been put up for auction by the Arizona State Land Department, and the team thinks they're gonna be able to win the auction this time. It's set for June 27th, and if it works out, they'll build a 17,000 seat arena costing between $800 million and $1 billion as part of the $3 billion, thank you for getting that, mixed use development. We just showed our age, but yes, he did the mini me,
Dr. Evil.
I think this is great, but I'm also like, I'll believe it when I see it. It feels like, okay, go for it. You know, like, I hope they work it out. We know Gary Bettman is hell bent on keeping a team in Arizona. So let's see what we can do.
I mean, I really want it to work in Arizona. I really do, because it's a city that's got right now all the major sports, you know, Suns, Cardinals, Diamondbacks, Coyotes, but you got to get something going. And if this doesn't work, when do you pull the chute? You know, I love that city. I've been there a handful of times. It's fantastic. I mean, it's a hell of a getaway. And it's a booming city too. So figure it out. I hope they can figure it out. I'm rooting for them, but at the same time, like you said, I'll see it when I believe it. When the puck drops to the first game, that's when I'm a believer. But for now, you gotta figure out a way to get out of the Molo Arena as fast as possible, because it continues to look bad for this National Hockey League.
It's not a good look for us at all whatsoever. And then all that nonsense, I think we briefly touched on it. There's like is it Anson Carter who wants to bring a team back to Atlanta? I'm like, okay, just like, we got issues in this league before we expand again. I mean, great. Like, I'm happy for you. That's awesome. But like, there's so much more needs to happen before we start adding even any more teams. And if Vegas can do it, if Vegas can build an arena for their hockey team in no time flat, right? Like, that thing was like up and running. It's on the strip. Like, tell me how they can make that happen, but Arizona can't. Anyway, I'm just preaching to the choir of people who are frustrated with the Coyotes.
Well, I have my two cents on expansion and stuff like that.
Oh, tell me. Oh, yeah, that's right. We've got your other topic that Andy texted me, said, I want to talk about this. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I got a lot. We got a lot to talk about. It's a fun episode. I do not want to see expansion.
No.
I don't. I think we're good at 32. As much as I'd love to see more jobs open up for players, for staff members such as myself, I think 32 is where we need to keep the line. I don't want to oversaturate the league. I think if we move to 34, some of your fourth line players are going to be a lot of people saying, who's that? Where they might be already, especially in the thick of the season when there's a lot of injuries. You're calling guys up. Then the AHL gets watered down, then the ECHL gets watered down, which is another topic we have to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see it just at 32. I think we're perfect there. I think we need to maybe, if Phoenix doesn't figure it out, rearrange them somewhere. Salt Lake City's in the talks. You got, like you said, Atlanta's in the conversation. Houston wants to get a crack at it. Does Quebec City get another crack at it? Like, those are all cities that could warrant another NHL team, but I believe for relocation, not for expansion. But money talks. And what's the expansion fee? $1 billion? It's a business.
Yes, it is something we cannot forget that it is a business. Talk to me about the business of the draft lottery. We're not there yet. It's not draft time just yet. We're getting close, but what is this brilliant idea you have of changing or relocating the draft lottery?
I think we should be in the draft lottery season right now, actually.
Oh,
So
really?
I feel like in order to avoid teams potentially tanking, you have to do and I thought about this over the weekend too, because I was debating on talking about this on air during the Blues games, because the Blues were against the Sharks and the Ducks, two teams that will be in the draft lottery, and it'll be 1 in 3, I think, is where they are right now in terms of the two worst teams in the league. Three worst teams, with your
Well,
boys as
don't you tread lightly a little.
a
You
team
tread
that's in there.
lightly. I'm very aware who the other team is.
So I think that this is a proposal number one. You take a 2 week segment out of October, a 2 week segment out of January, and a 2 week segment out of April.
Okay.
You combine the records, and whoever wins the most games out of those wins your lottery.
Okay.
So you also take into play your head-to-heads. So what did the Ducks do against the Sharks? The Ducks did a season sweep, let's say. They beat the Sharks 4-0. So the Ducks then get the nod on the first overall pick over the Sharks.
Okay.
That way, because I understand during the course of the season, teams are going to change. You're going to start, you want, I want you to start the season off good in October. Don't tank right away. Come January, you're going to have some injuries. And then after the trade deadline, I don't want you to tank either. So the first 2 weeks in April, right after the deadline, I want you to be competing. I don't want you to be losing. And that might avoid people selling the farm at the deadline. So I'd rather see teams competing rather than trading players off, icing an AHL team, and losing the rest of the layout. To me, that's ridiculous. So that's another proposal. The other one is just simply take your divisional record, and whoever has the best divisional record out of the bottom three teams gets the lottery.
That's not a bad idea. In theory, I really like your idea. I can hear all the criticism,
Oh
though,
yeah.
because like
There's
scheduling.
always something.
Scheduling, right? So how you pick the 2 weeks, that's not fair. Boo hoo, woe is me. I could just hear all of that happening. Like we fired our coach, and then that week is the week. And so now, we're in turmoil. And I don't know if like how do you actually make a fair average of the tent poles that you're saying throughout the season to keep the excitement going and to keep the play at a high level. I don't know, but I just know that a lot of people would be bitching more than they already do about lottery balls, so.
But that also made me pivot to my decision of potentially just divisional records, because that you those are your bulk of your games, and you know who your opponents are going in. And if I'm the Anaheim Ducks and I'm traveling to take on the Vancouver Canucks, Pacific Division rival, I as a Vancouver Canuck fan, I don't want to pay, let's say an average ticket there might be $100 to go see my team just thrash. Like, yeah, it's fine, but like, I want to see a competitive game on the ice. Like last night, the Blues played the Ducks. They went to overtime. They went to overtime against the Sharks. I was entertained. Granted, the Blues lost one, they won one, and I was happy for the Ducks that they came back to make it a game, because I was like, I hate it when it's 6-3 or when it's 7-3. That to me, that's not fun.
I agree with you. I think we need to have you draft a letter and get it certified and send it up to the governor's board meeting that's happening. in over the summer.
I wonder how quickly that would go into the shredder.
Hey, I mean, you can make it a signature.
Dear Gary Bettman. Yeah.
Here's my proposed idea for you.
Yeah.
Listen, there are boards of governors who take this stuff very seriously, like they do in the ECHL, who voted to terminate the membership of the Newfoundland Growlers. That's really unfortunate and only goes to prove your point of we should not be expanding when we've got ECHL teams who can't pay their bills and keep their teams alive, because now all of those players are out of a job. Obviously, they can get no team can pick up more than two players from that team, but who needs that many players? It's April. We're heading into playoffs. Like, are you really going to then you got to get rid of somebody. Where are they going to go? Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked, but the whole reason that they are no longer allowed to be members of the league is because they did not pay their bills. Basically, they had reportedly fallen behind on payments and were unable to secure a buyer for the club to help buy them out financially. It's really sad, because this is also really important because they're an affiliate of the Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. And this is that crazy story that happened at the beginning of January, this team with Terry Ryan, the retired player who is now the star, a star on the TV show Shoresy. He went back and played with them as his 40-something-year-old self, and it happened to be his birthday, and his whole family could go. It's his hometown, and like it was this huge, momentous thing. So I think Terry Ryan should have bought the team or put up some money to help them get through. That's what I think. But he did it with his abilities on the ice. So, I mean, I'll give him a little slack.
I think the hardest thing for this one is the city. St. John's, Newfoundland is...
What did I say? Newfoundland?
Yeah, you did.
Because that's how it's spelled. What is it? Newfoundland?
Newfoundland. And it's St. John's, Newfoundland, Labrador is the official phrasing of it. It is the furthest eastbound city in North America.
Okay.
So we'll touch a. I got a lot.
I don't even know what that means. The furthest eastbound what
city in North America?
What does that mean? Eastbound.
It's as far as you can go east in the continent of North America.
Oh. Okay, so over by me. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, it's up there.
Okay, got it.
And I got some stories about it. And everybody who's been in pro hockey, and it unfortunately used to be an AHL city. It's an ECHL city now. I hope they get something back. It used to be buzzing. It's a 5,000-seat arena, and it was sold out every game. Wow. It was the place to be in Newfoundland. It's all they did. That's all they did was watch hockey and drank beer, and there you go. So tons of stories, but what I will say is it's a shame, because I know that they have fans there that's all they count on. And, you know, through years and years of hockey history, everybody's got a story that's been through there. So I hope they are able to rejuvenate something in that city.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of the league that I get to see here in where I live. So, you know, that changes the shape of everything, and you don't want that to affect all the other teams in that league, in that division, you know?
And there's something that when you go there, you get screeched in, is what it's called. So there's a shot of something that you take. And I think the bottle is called Screech, which is why you drink it and you're screeched in. But you take the shot, and then you got to kiss like a fish.
What?
Yeah.
This is a
For
real
all
thing.
Of you fans out there, go Google it. That's like a rite of passage in St. John's, Newfoundland.
All right. I'm going to take your word for it. I'd have to get back on the wagon to experience that or off.
And it's like, honestly, go down a wormhole, because it's they talk so funny there. They're super fast. Like, it's super fast the way they talk. I remember. So what you would do generally when you travel, I think we flew there on a Wednesday, had Friday off to skate and practice and kind of get adjusted to the time zone because it was an hour and a half ahead. Then you'd play Saturday, Sunday, and you'd wait. You played Friday, Saturday. Thursday was your off day. You'd leave very, very early on Sunday. Like, your bus to the airport is 4:30 or 5 a.m. The thing was, is you'd pack before the game on Saturday.
Right.
And you just go to the bar till it closed down at 3, stumble your way home, grab your suitcase, and get on the bus. Some players have missed buses. Some players have missed flights over the years.
Oh, I believe it.
And I never forget the first time I ever did it. I heard the words of advice, pack, you're going to go out to the bars afterwards. Don't fall asleep. You're going to miss your alarm. So I packed, I stayed awake, and I got on the bus as soon as it rolled up at 3:30 or 4 in the morning. Just so I wouldn't miss it.
Yeah.
And the bus driver was as jolly as could be and just zipped off a line in Newfoundland. And I'm like, what? I couldn't understand him. I was tired. I was out the night before. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I don't understand you, sir. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I just went to the back of the bus.
Oh, my God. So they all sound like Terry Ryan, basically.
I have not heard what he sounds like.
You not watched Jersey?
I have not.
Andy.
Oh, boy.
I don't think I can let you back on this podcast until you at least watch one episode. They're 30 minutes. They're on Hulu.
That's what I needed. That's what I needed to do this whole time.
Yeah. That's now what's going to happen. I mean, it's like the only TV show on about hockey. Like, how have you not at least watched one episode to just, see?
Well, I don't think I have watched it at all.
Shorzy, that's your homework.
All right. Next podcast.
Before the next podcast and before you head off to your next tournament.
Okay.
We have to talk about the Professional Women's Hockey League because they have a championship trophy for their inaugural season. It's very exciting. They have a name. Billie Jean King helped named it. It is called the Walter Cup. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, it's I agree.
Good, strong name, but it also has meaning because the Walter family, it's honor of them and their foundational support that really helped launch the league, AKA financial support that helped get the league going. And it was created in partnership with Tiffany, the jewelry maker, not the singer, for anybody who's over a certain age will know. But I just think it is so perfect. The way that they did it and all of the, I'm not going to get into all of the markings and the things, but there's everything on it has meaning. I think it's big. It's beautiful. I love the name. I'm like, Wally, here we come. Let's do it.
I think it's great. And I'm more appreciative of the name and the thought process that went into it.
Yeah.
To honor, somebody, obviously it's a new league. So you can't be like, oh, this woman played back in the day. You could go Wickenheiser. You could get building blocks that have brought you to this point. But for somebody who's so important financially to the league, to bring you to where you are right now and beyond, I think that's, to me, what speaks volumes for the name of this cup.
It certainly does. And it's Tiffany blue, all of the things that
I actually haven't seen it.
It's not Tiffany blue, but it's Tiffany's and it's female. Oh, yeah. And it's a legendary brand and just all of the history that comes with it. I am super excited. The IIHF tournament is still going on right now in Utica. When we're recording this, US and Canada will be facing each other as part of the regular tournament, not finals yet, to get their seeding. So they'll probably be facing each other again in the coming days. If you're not watching, watch. Lots of exciting women's competitive hockey happening. But I didn't realize this until I saw it today. Where they are hosting the tournament in Utica is where they filmed several of the scenes of Slapshot.
Yes.
And I think that is so cool.
Yeah, so I talked about earlier in the podcast in Syracuse. In Syracuse, they shot a lot of the locker room scenes, I believe. I will never forget the scene in Utica that was shot was when the referee turned around to the Hanson brothers and was
That's
yelling
right.
at them, "Don't you start anything during the anthem and blah, blah, blah. Listen to the song."
Yeah.
But a fun fact, so if and you're gonna have to go back and pause it. The scene where you're looking at the Hanson brothers behind them, so this whole wall is all blown out now. They
Oh.
redid that entire part of the arena. So that was blown out about 4 years ago to make way for suites. So just a little fun tidbit.
There you go. So when you're watching the games, you can see what you see and see glimpses of the movie Slapshot. If you haven't seen Slapshot, what are you doing listening to this podcast at all or any hockey? Like, that's another rite of passage. Like, you have to watch certain hockey movies just as a fan. Like, you have to, right? I think you
I haven't
do.
seen Slapshot.
Yeah, right.
I was gonna
Yeah.
see. I was gonna wait for you to blow up. I
Get
haven't
out
seen
of
it.
here. Bye. Thank you for
You
listening. Andy's never coming back again.
know, one of my I love Slapshot. I haven't, and I've been wanting to try to rewatch this movie. I haven't seen this movie in like 10 years. I want to watch Youngblood again. I've been trying to find it for like years streaming, and I have to go buy it.
Yeah.
I guess I got to go online or something like that. But let me watch it one more time. I remember when I saw Youngblood several years ago, I was like, that might be my favorite hockey movie. I gotta watch it one more time just to verify that, though.
Interesting. What's it, is it called Alaska, the one with Russell Crowe?
Mystery Alaska.
Mystery
That's a good
Alaska.
one too.
That one's really good too. But
Yeah.
like different. But anyway, we don't have to talk about hockey movies. Let's talk about our hunks of the week and wrap this episode up. My hunk of the week is Gino with the Pittsburgh Penguins because his parents got to see him play in person for the first time in like 5 years, and he scored 2 goals, and his dad and mom are crying in the stands. They get to see this all happen. We know his career is coming to an end in a short amount of time, and it just warmed my cold Chicago heart.
Well, you know, I was thinking of something different entering this podcast. I was actually going to go off cuff and not even go hockey.
Oh.
But on the heels of that, though, I want to give recognition to a player who is not going to get recognition.
Okay.
So, Devin Cooley grew up in San Jose, and he's been an AHL player his entire career. I want to say he's either at 30 or close to 30 by now. He might even be a little bit younger, but whatever. He's not getting recognition. He's playing in San Jose. It's his third NHL game he's ever played. His other two are against the Blackhawks. And he won on home ice, his first ever NHL game against the Blues 2 nights
I
ago. His
saw that.
family was there. His mom was in tears.
Yes.
So that'll be my nod.
I saw that clip, but it makes me crazy when there's no context. There was no like explanation. I'm like, he won? Did he score? Is he the, what's happening? Why does this matter? There was like no context for people who don't follow the Sharks or anything like that super closely. And so I was trying to figure it out in my brain while you were explaining it. So I was listening to you. My brain just was trying to understand instead of paying closer attention.
I thought you were going to ask me who my initial hunk of the week was.
Well, who was it?
But I'm going to go off hockey though. Can I get away from hockey?
Only if you promise to watch an episode of Shoresy.
I think, hang on. I think you'll like this
All
because I'm
right.
trying to go along with the theme
All
for
right.
you,
All right.
and this is all for you.
Oh, okay.
Jake Gyllenhaal in Roadhouse.
Why? That's not
Have
like
you seen
new.
it?
Is that
Dude's
like,
cut.
is this a new thing?
Yeah, come on. Patrick Swayze was the old Roadhouse.
Yeah, I
All right,
know
let's.
that.
Okay, the new Roadhouse that just came out. I think
Oh.
it's on Prime,
Is that
HBO.
something you watch on the plane on the way home?
No, I watched that
You
like 2 weeks ago. Just haven't been
watched
able to talk. Haven't been able to
midnight.
talk about it.
Midnight when it dropped. No, I haven't seen it. And great for Jake Gyllenhaal and his abs. And is it worth watching?
It's so, okay. I am a huge fan of Patrick Swayze. Massive fan. And I loved the original Roadhouse. It's different.
Okay.
I liked it. I watched it separate nights. You know, I wasn't really too completely attentive to it. It goes, it doesn't follow the old Roadhouse. It's got its own theme and all that. But I thought at the end of the day, it was a pretty good movie. Will I go back and watch it again? Probably not.
Okay.
But he put in the work. Like, he did a really good job, I thought.
Good for him.
Conor McGregor's in it, by the way.
Oh, that's cool.
He actually, and the reason why I like the film so much is because really good fight sequences. I think it's one of the best fighting movies that I've seen in a very long time, and it all looks super real.
Okay.
And McGregor, I guarantee you, had a massive hand in that.
Oh, for sure. For sure. All right. I'll watch it. I just take major issue with remakes. Like, I just don't think films should ever be remade. And I have a hard enough time with sequels. Like, sequels can go so poorly so quickly. So I have a really hard time getting on the bandwagon with any kind of remake, especially such a classic film with a classic Patrick Swayze type. And that's all we see now is remakes of great movies. And it just drives me nuts that there's all these other great ideas sitting on the shelves in Hollywood locked up.
But is there?
What?
But is there? I feel like Hollywood, that's another podcast on another day. We'll get on our, we'll do our House of Hollywood podcast next.
House of Hollywood. Yeah, right. Well, thank you, Andy. Thank you for joining me after your very busy weekend. I appreciate you. I will appreciate you more when you watch Shorzy. And I will see you soon.
You bet. Thank you so much. And I will see you soon as I'm traveling up the Maine for the college roller hockey tournament.
Sounds good. Thanks for coming over to our House of Hockey podcast and hanging out with us. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And in the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Just look for House of Hockey podcast. We'll be back next week.